Hey there, it's David. Sweat equity is a term used often when talking about the creation or building process. It's about doing the work, the hard work, to bring an idea to life. That work becomes an investment in the project. It can be an investment as real as money or land. According to Investopedia, an online financial resource, sweat equity is the contribution to a project or enterprise in the form of effort and toil. Sweat equity is the ownership interest or increase in value that is created as a direct result of hard work by the owner. It is the preferred mode of building equity for cash-strapped entrepreneurs in their startup ventures, since they may be unable to contribute much financial capital to their enterprise. So, let's talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand. Sweat equity is about the work that you do in order to realize and/or transform everything on your want-to list. For you find yourself in the creation and building process right here, right now. The creation and building process of who you are and who you will be, aka the road less traveled by. Now that you find yourself on the road less traveled by, it's time to sweat. It's time to get to work. So, let's go island hopping. How's it really going for you here on the road less traveled by? Pretty tough, right? Well, God is very aware that transforming your want to is hard work. God is also very aware that the hard work of transformation is the only way that you'll ever establish and maintain a relationship with them. Why is this the case? Why is transformation that's so hard the only way to a right relationship with God? Because we're all members of a stiff-necked community known as humanity. We have just enough information and just enough insight to make us dangerous. Left to our own devices, we will mess everything up. Yet, in spite of all of this, God still wants to have an intimate, close, personal relationship with you. God wants to walk with you through the hard work of transformation. But since you've been given the gift of free will, you have the choice not to want to have an intimate, close, personal relationship with God. So we're all faced with this reality. God desires to have an intimate, close, personal relationship with you. And you have the gift of free will to reject that relationship. So, what do we do? I guess God could just sit around and have faith that we will all see the value of an intimate, close, personal relationship. God could just leave us to our own devices and hope that it all works out. I guess God could also change their mind and rob us of our free will. God could simply make all of us saved. God could force us all to have an intimate, close, personal relationship. But, and herein lies the rub, God is well aware that faith without works is dead. God knows that there's no power in have to. Where's the love? Where's the grace? And where's the compassion in simply hoping we get it right or forcing us all into an intimate, close, personal relationship? Thus, God needed to create a way to have an intimate, close, personal relationship with all of us that wouldn't rob us of our free will. God needed to think of a way to invite us to want to be saved, to want to have an intimate, close, personal relationship. This living out of our free will combined with God's desire to have an intimate, close, personal relationship with us all conundrum was explained to me as a child through a story. Yeah, it's always a story, for we are a people of a story, his story. There once was a husband and a wife with three children. The mom and the kids went to church every Sunday. The dad, although not preventing his family from going to church, never attended himself. He just honestly didn't understand the whole God, Jesus, salvation thing. Yet his wife would ask him to come to church with them every week. The dad's answer was always the same. He always had something to do, some chore to finish, or some project he was working on over the weekend. "You go with the kids and tell me all about it when you get home," he would tell her. Well, one Christmas Eve, the mom got the kids all dressed up for church, and again she invited the dad to come. "No," he said, "I'm going to stay home and finish decorating and getting ready for Christmas. You go with the kids and tell me all about it when you get home." So off to church, mom and the kids went, without dad. As they were leaving, it started to snow. As the car pulled out of the driveway, the dad heard what sounded like a cat outside. He ignored it at first, but it continued and he wanted to see what was happening. So he opened the front door and stepped out onto the porch. There he saw a little kitten all curled up under a bush in the front yard. The snow was just beginning to stick, and this little kitten looked so cold. Yet when the dad stepped off the front porch to try to get the kitten, it ran away into the bushes. The dad then just turned around and went back into the house. Well, the snow started to come down a little heavier. It was now piling up on the ground. From inside the warmth of his living room, the dad could hear once again the sound of the kitten. So back out to the porch he went. But when the light from the house shone out through the open door, the kitten once again ran back into the bushes. This time, the dad tried calling to the kitten. "Eee, kitty, 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 kitty." But to no avail. So back into the warmth of the house, the dad went again. It was about a half hour later when the dad heard once again the sound of the kitten outside. By this time, the snow had piled up and was deep enough that the little kitten couldn't walk through it. All the dad saw when he went out onto the porch was this little kitten jumping up out of the snow and then disappearing back into the snow, all the while meowing up a storm. The dad knew that this was starting to be a dangerous situation for this little kitten. If he was unable to get the kitten into the warmth of the house, it would surely die of exposure outside in the cold and snow. So again, the dad tried calling to the kitten, which again caused the kitten to flee back into the bushes. In his frustration, the dad exclaimed, "You darn cat! The only way that you would be saved from this storm is if I would be able to become a cat just like you and lead you into this house." It was just then, as those words were still floating around the dad's head in a word bubble, that off in the distance, the church bells sounded. And for the very first time, the dad finally started to understand the whole God, Jesus, salvation thing. See, God made the choice to lead all of us by example. God came to earth in the person of Jesus in order to lead all of us out of the snow and cold into the warmth of the house. God became one of us in the person of Jesus so that we could all have the possibility of salvation. God came to earth in the person of Jesus in order to give you and me a living, breathing example of what a life of wanting to be in an intimate, close personal relationship with God looks like. Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life, not because of any other reason other than he wants to walk with us out of the blizzard and into the warmth. Jesus came to walk with us, to show us the way. God coming as Jesus is the only way that any of us will ever want to be saved. For never forget that God didn't need to come to earth in the person of Jesus in order to save us. Unlike the dad on the porch with the kitten, God could have simply spoken the words, "You are saved," and all of us would have been saved. Yet salvation wasn't God's only goal in coming to earth as Jesus. God not only wants to save you, God wants an intimate, close, personal relationship with you. In the Garden of Eden, way back when all of this started, before the fall that was caused by sin, God walked in the garden with Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve had an intimate, close, personal relationship with God. And that relationship was forever changed because of their sinful act. The moment that Adam and Eve ate the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, they realized that they were naked, and they felt shame for the very first time. It was this shame, this consequence of their sin, that caused them to hide. This shame, this consequence of their sin, caused them to have a broken relationship with God, no longer an intimate, close, personal relationship. Adam and Eve's identity was now defined by shame. Whereas before eating the forbidden fruit, their identity was defined by an intimate, close, personal relationship with God. So when they heard God walking in the garden, they didn't wonder what that sound happened to be. For they had walked in the garden with God every day since their creation. But this time was different. It was different because their shameful identities that had been manifested by their sinful act. So they hid. It was then that God called out to them, "Where are you?" Not because God didn't know where they were. God wasn't asking a question of location. God was asking a question of identity. For when it comes right down to it, your life isn't about what you do. Your life is about who you are. And for the first time in their relationship with God, Adam and Eve had become someone different. They had become separated from God. Not because of what they did, eat the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, but because of the shame they felt as a consequence of that sinful act. It was their newly discovered shameful identities that separated them from God, for it was this shame that caused them to hide from God. Sin is anything that causes you to be separated from God. This sin, this separation, this break in your relationship is what God has wanted to mend, to heal, and to be made right since that day God asked Adam and Eve where they were. In order to fix this separation, God wants to do more than simply do your salvation. For simply doing your salvation will negate the gift of free will that is yours because of your creation in the image of God. God doesn't want to do your salvation. God wants to be your salvation. Why do you think the tree of the knowledge of good and evil was even in the garden in the first place? Wouldn't it have been a whole lot easier to simply remove the tree, remove the temptation? Thus, the sin of disobedience, the sin of eating the fruit, wouldn't have even been an option. Thus, the shame that formed Adam and Eve's new identity wouldn't have ever existed. Yet, there can be no right if there is no wrong. There can be no good if there isn't bad. There can be no light without dark. There can be no yes if no isn't a possibility. And there can be no free will without choice. Thus, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil had to be in the Garden of Eden. That is, unless you simply want all of us to be robots living out our algorithms. We have to understand that we have choices to make, that we have want-to decisions to wrestle with every single day. For it's in this wrestling that we truly discover where we are. It's in this wrestling with your want-to that you truly discover your identity. And this discovering of your identity right here, right now, is a vital part of your sweat equity. For God wants to show you a better way, so that you'll make the better choice to want to have an intimate, close, personal relationship with God. So that you will want to commit your life to the care and control of Jesus. But how can God show you a better way if you don't honestly know who you are and where you are right here, right now? God wants all of us to want to have an intimate, close, personal relationship with them. Yet God also wants to preserve your gift of free will. Thus, God has made the choice to leave the want to up to you, with a little persuasion thrown in for good measure. For Jesus is the living, breathing, walking, talking, healing example of just what that want-to relationship looks like. Jesus is your example to follow as you undertake this transformation of your want-to. In the person of Jesus, you're able to see, to study, and to learn just what life looks like when you want to be in an intimate, close, personal relationship with God. This is precisely why Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. For he is the only living example of what it means to want to have an intimate, close, personal relationship with God. In the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus, you see what it means to live as someone who wants to want God. Well, now the ball is in your court. God has done everything that can be done outside of controlling you like a robot. God wants you to want to be in a close, personal, intimate relationship with them. And because of God's very own design, the only way that this can and will happen is by you making the choice to commit your life to the care and control of Jesus. And that decision can't happen without transformation. Being a follower of Jesus is a personal decision that can't be lived into without transformation. So, the work of transformation is your sweat equity, for it can't happen without your participation. I don't know if you remember, but I warned you that this island is where the rubber meets the road. That this island was going to force you out of your comfort zone and into the transformation zone. That sweat equity was going to need to be invested. My prayer is that you're still in this for the long term. Yes, this work is hard, but it's worth it. So until next time, when I'll invite you to let go of your stresses and strains so that you can be transformed from someone who practices a religion into someone who has a relationship with God, I urge you to invest in some sweat rags.
Hey there, it's Donovan. Island Hopping is a production of Journey to Be Ministries and is sponsored by Beneva Christian Church. You can find Beneva Christian on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram, as well as their website, benevachristian.com. If you'd like to contact my uncle, just drop him an email at islandhoppingpodcast@gmail.com.